for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 423 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week is the return of Joel Rodriguez from the Dust County Chronicles franchise. He's got a Kickstarter going for Dust County Chronicles Nightfall number 1, so he's back to talk about how this series came to be, what we can expect that's going to be different, as well as what can be coming in the future. This indie comic initially started out featuring short horror stories that took us where we never expected to go, and now he's continuing on with a longer tale that expands out of his previous work. If you go to Kickstarter and look for Dust County Chronicles Nightfall 1, you'll find it there. So I encourage you to support this great creator and his newest project. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome back to the podcast Joel Rodriguez from Dust County Chronicles, who has a new Kickstarter going, and it's for the second, I think, book. And correct me if I'm wrong on this, Joel. It's called Dust County Chronicles Nightfall. I've got to get my stuff straight there. And it's out there in Kickstarter right now. And as we're talking, it's underway, and you've done pretty well in the initial hours and days of it. So I'm hoping by the time this posts, you'll have good news for us. But I think you're doing pretty well already. So I'm very optimistic of how this is going to do. How are you doing tonight, Joel?
I'm doing pretty good, Wayne. Thanks for having me back. I've told you this previously and privately that you're probably one of my favorite people to talk to when it comes to comics. So I'm really excited to come back and talk about Nightfall.
Well, that's great. Your stuff is great. It's easy to talk about quality is all I like to say. And so I think that's really good. So let's catch people up. Let's say they didn't get to hear your previous time with me. Talk about what the Dust County Chronicles are.
Okay, so the Dust County Chronicles proper, the main series, the Dust County Chronicles, is a horror anthology series that puts a horror twist on tales that you thought you knew. So the quick pitch for it is, what if Toy Story was a slasher? Or what if the Hatter had truly been driven mad? Things kind of along that nature, where it reminds you of things that were happy in your childhood, but it has a darker twist on it for a more adult audience. And the first two issues had a minimum of 4 short stories each, and those 8 stories encompassed the Dust County Chronicles. The reason why it has that particular title is because although the stories were self-contained and each one was its own little world, they all take place in the same geographic area of Dust County. And what we're starting with the Dust County Chronicles Nightfall is actually the first spin-off series. So it's directly related to the Dust County Chronicles. However, the entire format has changed. And the main reason for that is because ever since the first issue, the big driving focus behind Dust County is that things aren't always what they seem. And I wanted that to kind of hold true with the format of the series, because when the first issue was released, one of the biggest critiques that I got and one of the biggest responses was, okay, this is great, but I want to know more. And I figured, okay, well, I can give people more. So what the Dust County Chronicles Nightfall is it's a first issue of a 3-issue miniseries spinoff that takes characters from all 8 of the stories introduced in the first 2 issues of the Chronicles, and it brings them all together for a 3-issue miniseries. So where the main Dust County Chronicles series is short stories, Nightfall brings everything together and really focuses on what Dust County is as a place and what kind of nightmarish things happen there.
Now, I got that wrong then, obviously. This is the third book, not the second.
Yeah, this is the third overall Dust County story. Okay. Or issue, I should say.
So are you thinking about those first two issues, maybe collecting them into a single, you know, edition so people could catch up right away?
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to do a trade paperback for all five issues of the Dust County Chronicles all the way through the end of Nightfall, since Nightfall itself ties in directly with characters introduced in those first two issues.
Okay, all right. Now, of course, got to get right to the important question. Why is it called Nightfall?
Well, a recurring theme in Dust County is... obviously, dusk is the time of day where the sun is setting, where night is falling, and light has almost completely left. So what happened in issue number one, there is a story called Just Right. And in this story for issue number one of the Dust County Chronicles, a young woman is driving through Dust County on her way to an interview, and her car breaks down in the middle of the woods. And she stumbles upon a cabin while looking for help. Chaos ensues, and without getting too spoilery, it's unknown if she got in or if she ended up getting out of Dust County. So it picks up immediately following her sister's arrival into Dust County, because no one's heard from this young woman named Lacey. And her sister gets worried, decides to come into Dusk County. On the outskirts of Dusk County, there is a diner called the Daylight Diner. And the central most point of the county is the main city called Nocturne City. So as someone travels deeper into Dusk, they are going from Daylight to Nocturne, which is the darkest point in the night. So the reason why the story is called Nightfall is as it progresses and as Lori, the sister, gets deeper into Dust County, the night has fallen and the darkness starts to creep in and take over. So it's actually playing on the time of day as well as the mentality of the characters going through the story, because as you journey into dusk, the biggest goal is surviving the night and making it back out.
Okay. But the thing I'm interested in, too, is if people haven't seen the first two,
yeah.
how do they get a hold of them? Because that's going to impact – you can do that in the Kickstarter. I don't remember if that's part of the Kickstarter or not.
Well, there are a few ways to do it. We do have catch-up tiers to get digital and physical copies as part of the Kickstarter, but they're also available via Comixology and the Metal Ninja Studios website. If they're interested in picking up Nightfall, then the easiest way would just be getting them as part of the Kickstarter.
Okay, that'll be good. Now, of course, important things. When does this Kickstarter end?
The Kickstarter ends on the 20th of March.
Okay. Do you remember what time?
At 10 p.m.
10 p.m., okay. Some people do it like at midnight, and you got to be careful that you get it. Like, and it depends on the time zones and stuff like that, too. We're talking
yep.
Eastern time zone here, so that's where that comes in.
Yeah, it's 10 p.m. Eastern, and what I've done for the previous two campaigns, because both issues so far have been successfully funded on Kickstarter, mm-hmm. and one thing that I love doing is a live countdown of the last hour or so. And that's very hard to do at midnight.
Okay.
So that's why I default to 10 o'clock, where it's a bit later in the day, so people have time to get their last-minute pledges in, but not so late that I'm a zombie while trying to do this video.
Okay. That'll be good. So how do we find it on Kickstarter again?
You can simply go to Dusk County Chronicles. That's D-U-S-K, the DuskCountyChronicles.com.
Oh, and it'll take you right to the Kickstarter place.
Yep.
Okay, very good, very good. All right. So, as you've mentioned, there's a couple of things we got to unpack here as we go along. The Dust County Chronicles themselves were actually anthology short stories involved.
Yes.
And now you're making a transition into what most comic books are, and that is a longer story.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about making that transition, because, you know, one of the things that made this so interesting was the fact that they were
a lot of little stories, and you got to understand a little bit about all this. And now you're transitioning into a longer story format. Talk about why you did that and what changes you had to go through to make that happen.
Yeah, so the original plan for Dusk County, it was originally written to where it could be a single one-shot issue, and that would be the end of it. We talked briefly in the last interview about the origins of the Dusk County Chronicles, and long story short, I wrote one short story for an anthology that didn't get picked up. So instead of shelving it, I decided to make it into – I made three more stories and made it into a single-issue comic. The response to that was overwhelming. People loved it. We funded our first Kickstarter within 10 hours, and – the response was overwhelming. So I decided, okay, we're going to do it again. We're going to go for the second issue of short stories. And again, the second issue went very well. But one thing that I kept hearing, and I kept hearing over and over, was I wish the stories were longer, because there are people that love the short story format, but there are also people that see the cliffhangers at the end and they're thinking, okay, so what happens next? I want to know more about these stories that we've already gotten. 5-7 pages wasn't enough. So I had to figure out a way to satisfy both worlds, per se. Give people more of an in-depth view of Dust County without turning my back on the people that love the short stories. And that's where the spin-off format was birthed from, because I wanted a way to tell this long-form story and give people more background, bring back some fan-favorite characters, and show them interacting in new ways, and show that everything is connected without harming the format of the first two issues. And originally, this was actually going to be the third issue of the Dust County Chronicles. At the end of the second issue, it actually talks about issue number 3. And after that was released, I started thinking about it, and I was extremely worried that if I called it number 3, it would just be too jarring, because people are so used to the short stories. If they pick up number 3 and it's a to-be-continued first part of a 3-issue miniseries, I thought that was too jarring and it could rub some people the wrong way, understandably. So the best way to go about it that I could see would be starting this spin-off series of the Dust County Chronicles Nightfall, so that once the Nightfall storyline is wrapped up, if we decide to create more short stories, then we can pick up again with the Dust County Chronicles proper.
Yeah, I think that your success in the past is going to lead to more success as you go forward with it. So we should talk a little bit about the fact that you have a studio, Metal Ninja Studios, and you can go to that metalninjastudios.com and get stuff there as well, and that's probably, you know, a great place to go. And you have a store there too. Do you have other things besides the comic there for sale?
Yeah, at the metalninjastudios.com website, we have prints available. We have a couple of other stories that I worked on as a freelance letterer, as well as merchandise. One cool thing about the merchandise is we have shirts, sweatpants, things of that nature through our printing partner, Printful. But we also have some homemade home decor items that we actually make in-house. And we have a couple of collages based on the first issue and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Very cool, because it's all good stuff. You know, you have all good things. And, of course, I've seen you at a lot of conventions and things like that, too. So people always get at me because I do that later in the podcast. So why don't we talk about your schedule first, and then we'll get into the book. What conventions have you got lined up for 2020?
Well, my 2020 is – it's a bit weird compared to my previous my rookie year back in 2019 because of the new job that I have. My schedule is a bit more restricted, so I had to be very cognizant of that while setting up my schedule. So the first thing that I'm going to be doing is more of an attendee. I'm going to be going to Emerald City Comic Con. So I'll be in Washington State for a few days promoting Dust County out there and walking the show floor, shaking hands, meeting people. The first actual show, the big show that we're going to be doing, is MegaCon Orlando. We do have a table there, so we're going to be set up. And then later in July, I'm going to be going up to North Carolina for GalaxyCon Raleigh. That was a great show. I love visiting North Carolina. It's actually last year when I went up there, it was my first time going to North Carolina, and it's a very beautiful state. If you haven't been, I highly recommend it. And that is all I actually have scheduled right now, aside from a couple of shows that they're in the works right now. But the big scheduled shows are those three at the moment.
Okay. People always ask, how can we keep up with your stuff? Is Facebook? What's the way to do that?
Yeah. So we have Facebook at Metal Ninja Studios and Dust County Chronicles. We also have a Metal Ninja Studios Instagram. And one great way is if you go to the Metal Ninja Studios website, then you can sign up for our mailing list. And the mailing list gets first notification for everything. They get sneak peeks. They get to see covers first. And any big reveals go to the mailing list first. So if you're interested in getting the first shot, then head to MetalNinjaStudios.com and sign up for the mailing list.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay, now let's get into the book, because I really want to talk about the book. And I'm going to trust you to tell me what we can and can't talk about, because I don't want to spoil stuff. But on the other hand, I don't mind teasing people and giving people some idea. Let's talk about the crew. I mean, do you have the same crew that you had on the original books, or what changes have happened?
So we have the same exact crew on the interior, but we one thing that I like doing is mixing up the variant cover artists. So I am back, obviously, as the writer and letterer of the series, as well as publisher. Roman Gubsky is the veteran interior artist for Dust County, and he is back as well and provided our standard cover. I'm extremely grateful that Andrea Lorenzo Molinari of Caliber and Shepherd, the Shepherd, has come back as our editor. And of course, Christina Rodriguez is back as creative consultant. So the same team is back on the inside, but we have three new variant cover artists, one of which being Brian Silverbacks, who does a lot of work with Scout Comics, introducing a new cover artist. This is actually one of her first covers, and that is Stephanie Lavoud, and she does a lot with mixed media, with watercolors and inks. So that's an amazing cover. And cool little tidbit, since this is coming out on the 1st, I can actually say this. One thing that we're actually doing with the Dust County Chronicles Nightfall campaign is we are doing a cross promotion with Stake from Scout Comics and David Byrne. And Stephanie Lavoud's cover for Dust County is actually a connecting cover with a cover that she did for Stake. So there is a character in Dust County who's a vampire named Draven. And the cover features Draven fighting the protagonist from the Stake comic. So take those two comics, put them together, and you get one complete image. And then the other variant cover artist has done work for Comics Tribe, IDW. He's probably my favorite horror artist out right now, and that's Alex Cormack. He has done work for Sync, and he recently did Road of Bones for IDW. So when Alex agreed to come on board, I was thrilled. I was so excited.
Great. Well, it sounds like you got a great team. And now, I guess in the Kickstarter, that you can get the different covers, that different levels. That's how that works, right?
Yeah. So we're trying something a bit new with this campaign. Previously, we'd had about 5 to 6 variant covers that we then collected together as a collector's bag, and that's how we ran the first couple of campaigns. One thing that we're trying differently with this campaign is every cover will have its standard version. However, we're also going to have upgraded versions of the covers. So if you like the Alex Cormack cover, then you can get the Alex Cormack variant. But we're reintroducing something from the first issue, which was the Nightmare Edition. We are reintroducing that for all of our variant covers, rebranding it Midnight to follow the time theming that we have going on. And that upgrade is going to be the entire comic printed in black and white, including the cover. So it gives it more of a gritty horror feel, reminiscent of old George Romero movies and things that I grew up loving. And then another upgrade that we're going to have for the variant covers are foil printing covers. So we're trying things a bit different to see what people are interested in when it comes to variant covers and their upgrades. And all of that stuff is available through add-ons and the pledges on the campaign.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get into the book itself.
And sounds good.
I'm hesitant to spoil much about it because there are some really you made a copy available to me and I got a chance to read it, which I enjoyed. That was great. It's perfectly right in tune with the previous work that you've done with this book, so I'm really happy with it. It starts out really interestingly. I think we immediately find out a couple of things about a couple of people that we've seen previously. And boy, I don't want to spoil anything. This part of the surprise is the fact that you get to see some of this stuff, and right away we get to be clear. We've got to talk a little bit about vampires.
Okay.
Because clearly, you know, that's part of the Dusk County environment. Tell us what you can about how vampires function in the Dusk County world.
So the thing about Dusk County is imagine that there was a place where secretly monsters ruled everything and controlled the town. The way that some history that has yet to be explained within the books, so you're getting a bit of insider knowledge here into the lore of Dusk County, is a long time ago there was a facility, before the county was actually founded, there was a facility where they brought monsters and tested them to see what made them tick, all of that stuff. There was one monster in particular, a vampire, that got out of his containment unit, took control of everything, slaughtered the humans there, and has been secretly working in the shadows ever since. That vampire is Draven, who's the big bad of Nightfall. So the way that vampires work here is they are your typical standard blood-sucking vampires. They don't like sunlight. They're very powerful, very old, and very wise. And that is where we see Draven, because he essentially controls everything that happens within Dusk County. When it comes to the monsters, I should say. So all of the other monsters are afraid of Draven. That's how scary he is.
So he's, when you say that they run the town, is he's the figure that runs everything that goes on in the town?
He controls the shadows, essentially. Okay. So everything that happens when it comes to the monster activity, Draven knows about it. And that's why there's a line that recurs in Nightfall issue number 1. It's Nightfall is coming. Mm-hmm. And it happens kind of in speculation and rumors amongst the normal townspeople to where you don't want to be outside at night. Mm-hmm. They don't really talk about why, but you don't want to be outside at night.
Okay. Now, one of the things about the vampires I've got to talk about, some lore, vampires, when they drain blood from somebody, they kill them. Mm-hmm. Is that true in this book?
Yes and no. Because Draven, being the sole vampire in Dust County, he is very controlled. When we see Draven, he's in a suit. He's a very reserved type of person, which helps him keep a leveled head. But what he does when he drains someone is he drains them to the point right to the brink of death. And then he nurses them back to health. And that's how he keeps his food supply vibrant, I guess. How he keeps them stable. He doesn't drain them to the point of death to where he has to go out and get someone else. Did that answer your question?
Yes. Actually, that is a very smart way to do this stuff. I've always wondered, vampires have to kill somebody, then they have to get somebody else. That's kind of a, what happens if you eventually run out of people?
So this has been about a year since issue number one came out. So this is a spoiler alert for issue number one. I apologize if someone hasn't read it yet. But Draven made his first appearance at the end of Just Right, which was a short story in issue number one. And the main point of that story was one person that they brought, they being the monsters of the town, one person that they brought was too dead. The other one was too lively. And the third person, which was the character that we followed in the story, was Just Right. And the reason for that is because she was injured to the point where she couldn't run away and she couldn't fight back, but she wasn't dead. And what that meant to Draven is now I have someone that I can control. I don't have to fight too hard for it. You guys did your job just right.
See, that's a smart thing, and I guess the bloodlust is such that some people can't control that, or some vampires can't, and so they have to completely drain. But I've always wondered if the smart ones out there are kind of, why would you ever have to keep hunting all the time? If you had somebody you could get what you needed and then still use that person again, then that would be such a economic way of doing it. You're not going to run out of people if you keep that thing going. And granted, if you go too far, then you got to replace somebody. But to do that is just a smart way. And I know that vampires have often been thought of as just sort of these completely controlled by their urges kind of people. But there has to be eventually somebody that comes along and says, if I'm smart, I'll control my urges to this way. And, it sounds like that's some of the things that we're going to encounter in Nightfall. So I'm real happy about that, because I've always thought that vampires were smarter than they get credit for.
Yeah, yep.
I've always been so mad at that because, they're so taken over by the bloodlust that they can't. They're really not a threat in that sense, because once you start hunting, you're vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So I just thought that's a brilliant way to do it, and that plays part of the role in here, which is a great thing about it. Now, okay, we have the beginning where we run across some of the people we've seen before, and then we move to another location. What can you tell us about that?
The sheriff station?
Yeah.
So in the sheriff station, we are first introduced to one of our two – actually, technically, we're introduced to both of our main protagonists. That's Lori, who is searching for her sister. We mentioned her previously. And we also meet Susan. And Susan is the mother of Jenny Fisher, who was first introduced in issue number one, a story called – No Longer. And in that story, a young girl's brother comes back after disappearing years prior and says, "We can be together if you do this
unforgivable thing. If you can do this, we can be together forever. At first, she decides to do it, but then things go awry and chaos ensues, I should say. So at the end of that story, something happens to Jenny, and she is taken. Susan has been on a rampage for the 6 months following that, searching for her daughter. And when we first see Susan in Nightfall, she is right where her searches have gotten her, in handcuffs at a police station.
Okay. Now, of course, we're in a police station. We're obviously going to run into police officers.
Yep.
So we run into some police officers and some things go on with that. What can you tell us about the other woman that's in there? What should we know about her?
So the other woman being Lori. Mm-hmm. So Lori has come to Dust County after her sister disappears. She tries calling her sister, and it goes straight to voicemail. So she's extremely worried. So she comes to the police, as any logical person would do. Mm-hmm. And she says, "I need your help." So the deputy sheriff, whose name is Spencer Malone, essentially says, "I don't know what to tell you. You have no proof that she's actually here, because you can go to the spot where her phone, quote unquote, died, but you've got no proof that she's here. We can't really do anything for you." So Lori, being the determined person that she is, obviously isn't going to take that for an answer. So that's what sets her on her own path to go deeper into Dust County in order to find her sister.
Mm-hmm. Now, she's equipped for that, my understanding.
Yes, she is. We don't know much about her in the very beginning, but the one thing that I tried to portray is that she's a very smart and independent woman. So she's also extremely resourceful. So when she needs to figure something out, she is very quick thinking and able to gather the information that she needs in order to get things to go the way she needs them to.
Mm-hmm. Which is good. Now, and of course, I am always a big proponent of female lead characters. Mm-hmm. So when I came across these two, I was extremely happy, because I like it. I got to be honest with you, I think we've explored men to death. I don't think there's much – well, I can't say that. I mean, you know, men characters can be everything from scoundrels to scientists, you name it. But women have always been kind of relegated to the few helpless roles that they've had to do. Your characters are not that. They have a nice broad spectrum. I don't mean to use the term broad that way.
Yeah.
But they have a nice – there is a lot going on with them, and they're very interesting characters. And see, for me, because I haven't seen many female leads, I'm always surprised when they do stuff. I'm still learning good things about that, and I think your characters do that really well. I really think that they're different from each other, which is a great thing, and yet when they do things, I'm usually surprised as how they go things, because it's not the way that male characters would do those things in the situation. So I like that about this. I really enjoy. I'm always guessing, what are they going to do now? What are they going to do now? And I rarely get it right. And I like that about the book. The strong female characters are so interesting to me, and they pull me through because, like I said, I want to know what they're going to do next. And I think that the way you've crafted them and the way that the story is told, it's really a fascinating way to go about this. It's something I haven't read previously, and so I always enjoy it when I go someplace new. And this is what you're doing here, is you're taking me someplace new with these characters. I haven't seen this before, and so I like that.
Thank you. I wanted, when me as a writer, I'm a very emotional writer, so I try and put myself in the mindset of the characters that I'm writing. And naturally, I'm not a woman, so when it comes to how certain characters react, mm-hmm. I go to Chrissy, my wife, and I bounce a bunch of questions off her to off of her to figure out as much as I possibly can, so that I don't come across in any negative light. But when it comes to the basis of the characters themselves and their overall personalities, mm-hmm. I tried to give each of them one singular focus and let that guide them. And I think that in doing that, it took these two strong women and made them independent in their own right and determined by their own means. So, for example, Lori has no idea what happened to her sister, but she's going to be damn sure to find her sister. I'm sorry if I can't use that language, but and then Susan has had her entire life demolished. So she is trying to grasp at whatever straw she can possibly find in order to get some semblance of that life back. Mm-hmm. And she is going to do everything that she can to protect her daughter. Although she may not know where her daughter is, she knows that her daughter is still out there. She has that maternal instinct, and she will not stop until she brings her home.
It's a very gripping story because, you know, it's a sense of loss that's propelling both of the characters, and they are approaching it differently, which I think is really great, you know, because Susan is going to be more react emotionally and do things based on that, and she tends to do things a little more physically than the other character does.
Yeah, yep.
And they work well together because of that, the way that they complement each other. I think I like the way when they start doing things together, each one has a role to play as they do things. One of them takes charge at certain points, and the other one takes charge at other points. And it moves the story along really well. It really propels things going along, and it's very sympathetic the way that it's told. I like that about the story. I really care about these characters. And let's just say they don't get too far before things don't necessarily go the way they would like. More than that, I won't say. You know how you said that sometimes things aren't the way that they appear to be. And there's this thing that happens about two-thirds of the way of the book that it's might be reassuring, not in this book. Not going to be reassuring in this book. So let's just say that keep your eyes open for that. And then all the storylines converge, shall we say, as we get farther along in the book. And it has a big surprise ending, let's say. For me, anyway, it was a big surprise.
Yeah.
The way it ends, I was very shocked because certain things that I didn't expect. See, some things I thought meant certain things, and then when you get to the end, no. Like you said, it's the moment you think you know where the story is going, you're in for a surprise. And that was the case. And I, you know, I'm just really interested, which, of course, now leads me, of course, people asking for more. This book, obviously, you've already got basically things put together. And as I see, it looks like the way that the book is done, it says that it's going to come out in April.
Yes.
Yep. Have you been thinking, of course, now that you've got an ongoing story that everybody's going to be wanting to follow up on, do you have a schedule in mind for how these are going to happen?
We have a schedule in mind. We are leaving it a bit open because a few things have come up personally and professionally for me where I don't want to say a hard deadline and then end up disappointing because something happens that I didn't foresee. I can guarantee that at least one more, hopefully two, if the world was right and everything worked perfectly, Nightfall would be finished by the end of 2020. But I can guarantee that at least one more issue is going to be coming out within 2020.
Okay. Of course, I always say this to people about that. You should be thinking about what's going to be going on when those issues come out.
Yep.
This book would be ideal right around Halloween.
Yep.
Ideal. And if you can, I mean, if there was any way that this could wrap up right around Halloween, that would be fantastic. Or if issue two comes out around then, I think people will be in the mood for it. But I honestly, horror books, I think, come out all the time. I mean, it's the scheduler in me that wants to do those kinds of things just because I think people are more in the mood for that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's probably not going to matter all that much because people, once they get involved in the story, are going to want it as soon as they can get it. So it would be lovely if this would come out before Halloween. But if you can't do that, I don't think that's going to have anybody going, well, I'm not going to read that book. I think people are going to want to know.
I know that myself and Roman, we're going to be working as hard as we can to get it out as fast as we can. Because this is a story that we have to tell, and especially with the way that this first issue ends, it's a story that needs to be told. So we're going to be, I can assure that we're going to be doing everything that we possibly can to get it in your hands as fast as possible.
Okay, that's going to be good. Because I have a real strong feeling that when people start to read this, they're going to go, wait a minute. I need more. Well, just, I've already done that, so you know that's coming. There's people going to get to the end of this one. You've done your job just as you have in the other ones. People are going to be saying, where's the rest of it? So it's good for people to know that. That's a good thing, though. You know, when people do that, that's not an insult. They're saying, you've got me. You know, I'm hooked. What now what? Now what are you going to do for me now? Now that I'm hooked and I need this thing, what's going to happen? So that's a good thing. Like with me, I got to the very last page, and I was like, oh, no. That's not the last page. Oh, no. So it's again, it really follows the tone of the first two books, and everything goes along really well. And like I said, you don't know what's going on. If you think you know what's going on, you're going to be surprised, like I was. I thought, okay, this, and then I look back and I go, okay, you tricked me there, and you tricked me there, kind of stuff. And of course, I love to be tricked. You know, I've been reading comics for a long time, and when somebody can fool me, I love that. I think that's a wonderful thing.
I love being able to do that.
it means a lot because I got to tell you something. I have read just some books. I get 2 pages, 3 pages in, and I go, okay, I know what's going to happen on the last page. And I get there, and I go, oh, brother, okay, I wasted my time. Yours, when I got to the last page, I went, oh, I've got questions that I can't talk about here because I don't want to spoil anything. But let's just say that last page fills me with more questions. And I gotta know, I gotta have answers to those questions. So it was like, I don't know if you ever watched Batman the Animated Series, and they had the Riddler, he trapped Batman in a place, and somehow Batman escaped the bomb that was gonna go off in the room, and he was sure he was gonna kill him, and you know, Batman gets out there, and of course the Riddler can't figure out how he did it. And he's in jail at the top of his lungs yelling, how did he do it? I have to know. And that's kind of me when I get to the end of the book. I'm going like, what in the world? I have to know what's going to happen next. So it's just a tremendous book. It's just really, really good. I'm glad that this is continuing because I really loved the first two. And I read them close together, and that's why I thought there was one. But I read them near, and that made me think there was one, but there's not. This is the third book, and like I said, if you haven't read it and you like horror, this is the book for you, I think. This is going to be great. I'm not a big horror fan, and it still grabbed me. So even if you haven't read a lot of horror, I think this is a book that I think you can get into. It has, you know, this is just a perfect book for a supernatural-type TV show.
Thank you.
It would just be ideal for that because I could see like a commercial break coming after the last page of this book. And, of course, then I'd be, you know, I like it when I tape something or record something, and then I can fast-forward to the commercials because they just impediments for me to be able to find out now what's going on. So I zip through those. I'd rather wait till the show's over rather than watch it live because I want to get the whole gist and not have to watch, you know, the pain of cirrhosis or whatever it is that they do that.
Yeah, I've become spoiled with Netflix and Hulu. I can't watch commercials anymore. It spoiled me way too much.
It's the way it is. It's an interesting change in television, but your book fits right in that perfectly.
Thank you.
I just think that is – I could see this on Netflix really easily. You know, this is the kind of story that I think people would really get into and really come to grip with the characters and really understand what's going on. And, of course, want to know right away, what are you going to do next? You know, because that's the only bad thing about making comics is sometimes you have to wait for the next comic, especially an indie comic. But as long as you're honest with people who are fans and you tell them what you're going to do and how you plan to proceed, they'll be understanding if something comes up. You know, reality gets in the way of comics sometimes, and you got to do that. But, you know, as long as people know what's going on, that's why we talked about ways to follow you and be able to keep up with things like that. You can tell people that way, and that'll keep things going. And, of course, once people support on Kickstarter, you can follow up with them by email and stuff like that, too.
That's one reason why I keep going back to the Kickstarter platform and why I love it so much is if this book were to go through the direct market, then I don't have any direct connection to the fans. It's the comic book stores order it from Diamond. Diamond orders it from me, so I sell it to Diamond. They sell it to the store. Then the store sells it to the customer. There's no contact there. I don't know who's buying the book. I can't talk to them. They can't ask me any questions. We can't talk about it. Whereas with Kickstarter, like you said, they have a direct connection to me and I can talk to them. So all of those questions, the timelines, the story questions, I just it's funny that you had the comment about TV, because just the other day I had a fan ask me if I saw this as an animated TV show or as live action. And he had read a 12-page preview. So he read everything within the first couple of scenes of Nightfall. And he was asking, I see this as a TV show. How do you see it? And that's a conversation that I'm able to have because of Kickstarter. And that's why I love the platform so much.
Okay, good. I got to ask you, what did you say? I mean, is it animated or live action? What's your preference as far as that goes?
Preference, I mean, if they want to make a TV show, I prefer that. But if I had to choose between animated or live action, I would probably have to go with animated, mainly just because of the budgetary restrictions with CGI and the number of monsters and just the supernatural element of Dust County, it could be very restricting with the CGI budget. So it would probably be better to just do animated, and then you can do a lot grittier of a story without holding back as much.
But if somebody came with you and said, I have a budget that I can do live action with this, you wouldn't turn that down.
Oh, definitely not. Definitely not. Okay. So if there's someone out there with a budget for live action, give me a call.
Because I could literally, like I said, I see this as like a supernatural. Sadly, that show's going off the air, but this could very easily fit into the supernatural universe. And really well, because they have a female police officer and stuff like that. And there's all kinds of things that could have played into this really well. But, you know, it's just such a great story. It's going to be great fun to read. Yeah, and I can't see what you got in mind left, because there's just going to be – how this is going to resolve, I have no idea. That's the thing. I mean, where you're going, I just don't know. And it's going to be real interesting to see, because you've set the bar high, I think.
Well, I could tell you, but what's the fun in that?
No. I don't tell me. I don't like to spoil. I like to be teased, but I don't want to. I want to enjoy the story. I have a friend of mine I used to work with, and she used to always tell me she'd read the story of a book before she would read the whole book, because she had to know if it was a happy ending or not. If it was not a happy ending, she was not going to read the book. And I said, isn't that terrible, though? You know the ending already. How could you read the book? And you know the ending. The whole point of reading the book is to get to the ending. No, that's the way it is. And I'm always like, I don't want to know the ending. I want to get there, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't do that. I am just like you. I'm major anti-spoiler. It drives me crazy. There are times when my in-laws, for example, would watch a movie before Chrissy and I, and She's not so big when it comes to spoilers, so she can talk about anything. She really doesn't care. There are times when I've gotten up and left a room because they start talking about something that I didn't want to know.
My brother does that to me all the time. If he reads the comic before I do, he sits there and he starts spoiling it. And I say, okay, Randy, I don't have to read the comic anymore. You told me what the whole book is about. So what I always, you know, I try really hard to tell him, stop. Don't spoil anymore. I want to read the book. I want to enjoy the story, because you know what good is that? I mean, if you know the end of the story, you're not going to get the surprises. You're not going to you're not going to understand the pick up the things and go, oh, that's why they did that kind of stuff, which is the fun part of storytelling in my mind.
So, well, it's like we talked about earlier. As a writer, I very much put myself in the emotional headspace of the characters, and that comes from everything that I've consumed as a fan of media, be it movies, comics, etc. I love seeing the psychological impact that different actions have on characters. That's why when I write, it's very character-driven. It's not, I need to hit plot point A, plot point B. It's, okay, this just happened. How did that affect them? Mm-hmm. And spoilers, for me, take that away. Mm-hmm. Because at that point, it becomes plot point A, plot point B. I don't get to see how the person was affected, how their psyche reacted. Mm-hmm. And that's an important part for me.
Now, before I let you go, I want to talk about the art, how much I enjoy the art. There are two things I always judge things, storytelling on. I judge artwork by action sequences and by facial expressions. And, you know, there's a lot of drama in this book, so you don't have a tremendous amount of, have superhero battles or anything like that going on, but you have a lot of drama that propels the story and moves it along. The facial expressions, I thought, were particularly strong, the way that Roman did them, because there are some times when I look at somebody's face and I go, oh, that's what they're feeling. You know, it's really nicely done. He does a real clear job of showing what people are experiencing. And I think that, particularly in this story, is really helpful as we go through the pages and we get to turn the page and see what's going on and how they're reacting and stuff. That's really, really, really helpful in reading this story.
Yeah, I'll be sure to pass that along to Roman, because that's one thing that we talked about from the very beginning with this one is, like you said, there's not a lot of superhero action or anything like that. It's not that type of story. It's more so, how did these people come together and how did these events affect them? And that's a very emotional tale. So we talked a lot about how much emotions are going to affect these people, and I'm with you. I think he blew it out of the park when it came to facial expressions.
And I want to tell people, don't think it's dull. It's not dull. You know, some people think there has to be a lot of punching and kicking going on, and that's not the case. You don't always need punching and kicking. You need things to impact people, to make you care about the characters and to want you to move forward and find out now what's going to happen to them. And I think this his artwork does that particularly well. And I think with your plot, it's a good combination. And as far as storytelling goes, it really works.
Thank you.
So it's good. All right. I always got to ask, because you've got a real life, of course, as well as doing this stuff. Are there other projects you're working on that we should know about?
There are quite a few projects that I'm working on. I believe I talked in the last interview about a project called Before My Eyes. Mm-hmm. That is a post-apocalyptic tale as one man travels across the country to be reunited with his family. The twist is that he's on his deathbed after his 20-year journey, and he's reliving the story as his life flashes before his eyes from the perspective of a guy that thinks he's going to die a failure. So that's a story that I have in production in the background. I don't talk about that publicly too much, primarily just because we're making sure that we take our time with it. It is a very important story to me, so I want to make sure that when we release it, we give it everything that it possibly needs. Not to say that Dust County isn't important. It's just that at the same time, I don't want to take away from Dust County itself. I've seen far too many times where creators rush out too many projects at the same time and nothing really has focus. So the main push for Before My Eyes is going to be after the conclusion of Dust County. So that's why that's in the background for so much. And then I've been doing a lot of work on other people's projects as a letterer and production designer. I've started working for Scout Comics as a production designer. So I've been putting together a couple of books for creators through Scout. And that's been taking a lot of time. So yeah, there's a bunch of stuff coming from Metal Ninja Studios and from other publishers and a bunch of stuff with my name on it. It's actually kind of funny because I have a list of all of the books that were published with my name on them. And it's kind of, it's something that I started very early because that was my dream. I wanted to have a book with my name on it. In 2019, through the books that I lettered as well as Dust County, there were 7 different books with my name on it.
Oh, cool.
2020, I will have, I believe, 8 books by the time April comes around.
Wow.
So things have really kicked into overdrive very quickly. And I'm just riding the train, loving every minute of it.
Cool. Very cool. Well, that's good. It's nice when those things start to happen for you. And, of course, we talk about that reality things might intrude on some things. But I think you're making the smart choices and doing the good stuff. I always think back as when Richard Rivera and I would go around, and he was working on Stabity Bunny for a while, and then he went into some other stories. He did some other books, and they might yet see the light of day, just besides the indie publishing that he did. But people kept coming to him and asking him, what happened to Stabity Bunny? Where's more Stabity Bunny? That should be coming. Where is it? We're looking for that. And eventually one day he turned to me and said, you know what? I better get back to Stabity Bunny. And smartly he did. He went back to Stabity Bunny and got that train rolling again. And he's coming to the end of the first 12-issue arc coming out from Scout. And I always think about that. I think you're doing the wise thing. Not that what Richard did wasn't necessarily wise, but, you know, when you've got people asking for it, you know, as you have, that's, you need to meet that need. You know, and do that. Just develop those fans and make that fan base grow, and, you know, get people to say, "Oh man, you got to read this book." Kind of stuff going on, and that's the good thing to have. That
I'm trying to get a little bit of the best of both worlds, because I've seen two different sides of a spectrum. I've seen people try and release too much too quickly, where they're working on, as I said before, like 2, 3, 4, sometimes even 5 books all at the same time. And whether it's missed deadlines or the quality of the book suffers or something happens where the books could have been improved by trimming down that load. At the same time, I've seen people focus so heavily on one thing that once that one thing is done, there's nothing to follow it up. So there's a void there that they don't have the resources to fill. So that's why I'm personally working on Before My Eyes in the background, because then once Dust County is, for lack of better term, finished with the Nightfall story arc, there's not going to be a void where people are saying, okay, well, what's Joel working on now? Let me tell you.
Well, I got to ask you one thing, though. Will this conclude the Dust County Chronicles once you get through Nightfall? Or I can't imagine you don't have other stories that are lingering around that are waiting to be told.
Well, there are other stories that are lingering around ready to be told, but I think there may be a slight hiatus after Nightfall for the sole purpose of I have other stories that I want to tell as well that are outside of Dust County. And I want to stretch those other muscles before coming back to Dust County itself. So I want to make sure that I put in the effort and the time and everything needed to make Dust County the best that it can possibly be through Nightfall, and then move on from there, work on some other things, and then see where things take me in the future.
Someday it'll say, you know, have your name, and it'll say from the creator of Dust County Chronicles. That'll be a great day to see when that's coming too, I'm sure. So it'll be good stuff. So
thank you.
You know, all I'm telling you is you're doing good stuff and just keep it up. I can't wait to see. Now you got me waiting for I've read the first of the Nightfall series. Now I want to see number two. when you get it done, you have to send it my way so I can we'll have to talk again when that comes.
Oh, will do.
Because the way you're talking, there's likely another Kickstarter coming for that issue.
Yep. So, yep.
That's the thing. The Kickstarter has made comics a viable thing for so many people because you get to those of us who enjoy things can now support those things. As I always tell the story, that a friend of mine, when Joss Whedon was trying to go on and do more Buffy and they canceled the show, he was saying the fans should have gotten together and collected money and made that happen. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, that'll never happen. And he didn't know it, but he was like forecasting, and he was not the one to create a Kickstarter, but he had the right idea, and somebody else came along and created a Kickstarter. And so we are making things like your book happen, and that's the way I think it's such a great thing for us to be able – I feel good supporting quality stuff, and I just think that your stuff is some of the best stuff that we get to support. So I can't wait to see more, and it won't be long. People are going to know your name a lot better than they already do. So if people should get to know you now so they can say, I knew him when.
Thank you. That means a lot, Wayne. I really appreciate it.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when we'll have more interviews and other good things. But until then, keep reading your comics.